Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 148. My name is John. Before I begin this month's podcast, I need to take a few moments to pay my respects to the great George Perez, who passed away recently. I don't know if I can ever properly express how much George Perez's art enraptured me. As I started getting deeper and deeper into comic books, I would grab new issues wherever I can find them, as the grocery store where I picked up my first comic was not always reliable. I just happened to pick up Justice League of America number 184, which I would find out much later was the first issue of that series George Perez drew, because the previous artist, Dick Dillon, had suddenly passed away at the age of 50. Sobering thought, as that is now my age. His brief but memorable run was highlighted by Justice League of America number 200, a star-studded issue in both superhero characters and comic book talent. George Perez drew the bookends and connecting chapters of the story, and it is still my all-time favorite single comic book issue. He then went on an epic run of the New Teen Titans that gave DC a hit series at a time it desperately needed one. Most people point to the Judas Contract as the pinnacle of Teen Titans stories, but my favorite will always be The Terror of Trigon, which included pages that Perez penciled without finishing inks at a time when they were almost mandatory. Perez simply built on his pencil drawings until they were dark enough for the printing technology of the day to read it. When DC decided to reboot its entire comic book universe, George Perez was tapped to draw the 12-issue mind-blowing Crisis on Infinite Earths, which is still considered landmark to this day. From there, he did something no one expected. As characters were being brought up to date in what is now called the post-crisis era at DC, George Perez took on a character that had been floundering for some time. Wonder Woman. I was never much for DC's Trinity, but it's because of George Perez that I love Wonder Woman. His richly detailed artwork drew in your eyes, but he showed his storyteller side was just as talented. Wonder Woman became a must-read comic book for me. His work on JLA Avengers alone is monumental. That is an absolute must-have for any comic book collector who loves either DC or Marvel. He also did an interesting non-superhero miniseries with writer Peter David, called Sex and Violence, about a softcore porn model and photographer getting revenge for the death of a colleague. Even with just these few personal favorites I've mentioned, that's just the proverbial tip of the iceberg on his body of work. His intricate artwork was lauded by fans and was the inspiration for many current comic book artists. I will never be able to put into words the wonder and happiness George Perez's work brought into my life. He is and will always be my favorite comic book creator. I wish I had the opportunity just once to shake his hand and say thank you. It still hasn't quite sunk in for me. I'm sure one day soon I'll pick up something of his and I won't be able to hold back the tears. Until then, I can only express 40 years of gratitude. From the 10-year-old me sitting on the couch reading spinner rack issues of Justice League to the 50-year-old me with the collective hardcovers of those same stories next to me on my desk. my amazement of his talent is still the same. I and so many others will miss you dearly. But you now take your rightful place in the pantheon of greats. Rest in peace, George Perez. Now, on to this month's podcast. Tell your mama, tell your pa, I'm going to send you back to Arkansas. There's a lot going on with the United States of America and the rest of the world right now. A couple of years ago, I would have jumped at everything, from the idiocy and the tragedy in this country and around the world. I would have written at least 3 podcasts and been set for episodes throughout the summer. Kind of lost that desire. It's still there. I can feel the ideas germinating in my brain. Maybe it just needs time, or maybe I'm just not quite ready to talk it out. Even though I've been like this for most of the past year, I'm also 3 months into a new job that, well, it's really stressing me out. When I get home, I don't really want to think about anything that's going to anger and frustrate me. I mean, I'm 50 years old, starting over in a brand new field, and I don't know if I'm going to make it. It's mentally exhausting to the point that by the time I get home and get dinner ready, Gina and I have time to watch a little bit of television, usually something lighthearted, and take showers before going to bed. Weekends are filled with chores, errands, and obligations. I don't have as much time as I previously had to write, record, edit, and publish a podcast. So when I do have a few moments to put myself out into the ether, the last thing I want to think about is fucking politics. I want to think about important things. The truly important things, like family, inner peace, and happiness. That's why I am proud to say that in my continuing attempt to avoid the frustration of talking politics, I have once again found an excuse to focus on something that I like and that brings me happiness. For 9 out of the past 12 months in this podcast, I've gone over some travel destinations Gina and I have experienced, some classic movies I love, recent movie releases that were, you know, hit and miss, and DC's surprise hits on HBO Max. This time around, though, I'm going to give you another travelogue. Gina and I had the week off in mid-May, and we drove up to Hot Springs, Arkansas for our 5th visit. Back in 2016, Gina's foot was on the mend after an accident, and she was getting around with the help of a knee scooter. She adamantly did not want to take a plane during our anniversary vacation, so instead, we rented a car and took a trip that we dubbed the Circle of the South. Starting at our home in Texas, we drove up to Arkansas for 2 nights, then over to Tennessee for a night. Then after stopping for lunch in Alabama, we drove down to Florida for a couple of nights. Then after lunch in Mississippi, we continued over to Louisiana for a couple more nights before going home. 7 states in 7 days. Approximately 2,300 miles, it was the most we ever drove in a single week. The first stop was at Hot Springs, because Gina had heard a lot of good things about it. I vaguely remembered hearing about it as a place that both baseball players and gangsters liked to hang out 100 years ago. We enjoyed the little time we spent there so much that we started making that our late spring getaway. Sometimes we incorporate a night in either Grapevine or Waco, but this time around we just drove straight up and back. Of course, we missed the last 2 years as the rest of the world went into mass panic, so we were excited to return. There are certain things that we love doing on these trips. We have to stop in the town of West Texas at Slovacek's to get kolaches for the road. there are three Buc-ee's along the way, which is a mandatory stop for any road trip in Texas. We always seem to stop at the Love's gas station just outside of Texarkana because there's a McDonald's connected to it, and for some reason, Gina gets a craving for fries every time. Imagine that. Once in Hot Springs, I like to go to Crazy Samurai for sushi and Colonial for pancakes. We like to make a stop or two, or three, at Fat Bottom Girls for my favorite cupcakes. Gina loves stopping by Bathhouse Soapery, and we like to drop by the Riley Brothers Studio to watch the glassblowers and to buy one or two or three things to decorate the house. I like driving up the West Side Mountain to look out on the city, and we bring along a dozen empty bottles to fill up on natural spring water from the taps placed around town. You'll see tourists and locals doing the same. The highlight is Spa Day at Quapaw Bathhouse. This is the only time I let Gina talk me into doing massages. We do an afternoon at the spa, including a couple's massage, bath, and facial. Sadly, after this trip, a couple of those things may be removed from the list, but fortunately, other things have been added. So let me go ahead and get those negative things out of the way first. Fat Bottom Girls moved from their location at the very end of the historic downtown area to the center across from the bathhouses. Their old location is now selling pupcakes, that is to say, cupcakes for dogs. I'm wondering if they had a mix-up with their recipes. I used to go to Fat Bottom Girls and sink my teeth into some of the moistest and softest cake topped with sinfully delicious frosting. This time around, the cake was dry and bland, and the frosting was just average. We've always gone to get cupcakes as soon as we arrive and then grab some more just before we leave to go home. Didn't do the traditional second visit because of the disappointment. Hopefully, they'll get back to their original quality. There's nothing like good barbecue. And McLard's barbecue is nothing like good barbecue. Now, I'm not going to try to make myself out to be some kind of connoisseur of a queue, but if you order a sampler plate that includes sausage, chopped brisket, chopped pork, and ribs, and the best thing by far is the sausage, better than all the others combined, you know you're not in a good place. You know how good, slow-cooked ribs will practically fall off the bone? The meat on those damn bones were holding on and refusing to let go. I make better pork in a slow cooker on my kitchen counter, and it's pulled pork, not chopped. I'm not sure if you're understanding what I'm trying to say, so just so there's no confusion, don't go there for barbecue. It is quite possibly the worst I've ever had. That being said, Gina is insistent that I mention their tamale spread appetizer, which is basically Frito pie on top of tamales. It can serve as its own meal, and should, and it is the one thing I recommend. So when it comes to McLard's, get the spread and get out. There's one place I usually love, but it's now on the wait and see list for me. Colonial. Everyone talks about how great the Pancake House is across the street, but the pancakes I had there were heavy and chewy, like they had been overmixed and had too much gluten in them. Colonial, on the other hand, had big, soft, fluffy, melt-in-your-mouth pancakes made with malted flour. This last time, though, they were good, not great. and the service was not up to its usual standards, even though the place was less than half full on a weekday morning. I'll give them another shot next time and hope it was just a one-time dip. I do have a couple of other pancake options that may take its place regardless. In fact, let me go ahead and get to some places I recommend, starting with the breakfast places. The boldly named Best Cafe is an eclectic little place with only a few tables, so it's pretty damn difficult to get in on the weekends without a long wait. And when you were as hungry as we were that morning, we decided to skip it and try again later. And we did go back during the week without any wait whatsoever. It was a delicious breakfast, and we're definitely going back, just not on a weekend. Their pancakes are served with whipped vanilla butter, and you have an option to add grilled Newski's bacon, which is a brand name with a triple thick cut. Gina thinks it tastes like ham, and she's not far off, but it was certainly worth a try. Higdon Square Cafe was where we ended up when other places were either overcrowded or closed. The pancakes were huge, thick, fluffy, and just a very subtle crisp on the edges. It may just pass Colonial as my new favorite pancake. It's a refurbished old house with its own charm and colorful clientele. Alexa's Crepery was one of the places we simply missed on our previous visits because they were, in the waitress's own words, hidden behind a gas station with almost no foot traffic or visibility from the street. Their new location opened up just before COVID, and their loyal customer base, along with their willingness to stay open for takeout when other restaurants closed for months, kept them going. The crepes are classic French fare. The savory crepes Gina and I got were impressive and deceptively filling for its size. Of course, the three places I've just mentioned do more than just breakfast, but that's what we had when we were there. If their brekkies were any indication, they do a lot of things right. We know we finally reached the end of our 9-hour road trip when we see the sushi restaurant Crazy Samurai. I know, the last place anyone expects to find good sushi is in the middle of Arkansas, but everything I've ever gotten there has been delicious. I recommend their flaming sushi rolls, which are some unusual concoctions wrapped in foil and set on fire. Just trust me on this one and give it a try. Also, they make some really nice sake cocktails. Bubba's Brews is a great lakeside eatery with some good pub fare. Their burgers were big and tasty. Their in-house beer was good. I've had better, but I've also had considerably worse. And even though it was busy, our waitress was very gracious and apologetic when the order was messed up and got it taken care of quickly. One of our restaurant rules on vacation is when you have the opportunity to try something new, do it. Thanks to Bubba's Brews, we can now say we've tried Rocky Mountain oysters. It's not something I would actively seek out in the future, but they weren't horrible. Basically, they just tasted like overcooked mushrooms. Superior Bathhouse Brewery is at the end of Bathhouse Row, and as you can probably extrapolate, it's a former bathhouse that has been turned into a brewery and restaurant. It was one of the first places we ate when we originally visited Hot Springs. This is probably my favorite brew house in Hot Springs so far, although there is another place I heard about on this last trip that I didn't have time to get to, and I'm dying to go, and I hope to be able to say something good about it in about a year. In the meantime, Superior Bathhouse is definitely worth a visit, order a flight, and sample some of their beers when you go. There's a place Gina absolutely loves, but I can't go, at least not for too long. The Bathhouse Soapery. This is a store that sells all kinds of handmade soaps and lotions. I can't go inside for more than a minute. I can probably endure one, maybe two strong scents, like if somebody wears too much perfume, for instance. But if I walk into a place like that with dozens of scents all around me, I will have a migraine within a minute. I can't even stay too long in the cleaning supply aisle of a grocery store. So Gina goes into Bathhouse Soapery, and I wait for her outside. We have a new place that is now on our must-visit list. Gina read about Crystal Ridge Distillery that opened up just prior to the COVID madness, so they were new to us. We got there just after they opened for the day. We figured, I'll go in, look around, maybe buy a bottle or two, and then get on with our day. 4 hours, and approximately $200 later, we walked out the door. We got in and found they distilled their own moonshine on the property and had recipes for whiskey and vodka that they have made off-site. They have a dozen different flavors of moonshine, and we tasted most of them. Now, I'm not a huge fan of flavored liquor. I will occasionally have a mixed drink or something tropical, usually on vacation. But my go-to drinks are whiskey on the rocks or ice-cold vodka straight. Some of these moonshine flavors were extraordinary. My favorite is the strawberry moonshine, which I will be drinking on the rocks this summer. We came home with that, as well as a bottle each of cinnamon, maple bacon, and their Mule Kick, which is 120 proof straight moonshine. As we sipped the tasting samples, we chatted with Tara behind the counter and tried to come up with ideas for mixing the flavored moonshine, especially the more eclectic flavors like the apple or maple bacon. I think with the latter, you do a modified Irish car bomb using a shot of the maple bacon moonshine dropped into a blueberry lager. When I got home, I bought a pack of Main Root blueberry soda to mix, but the taste wasn't quite what I had hoped for. After finishing the tasting, we walked over to the bar area, run that day by one of their managers, Erica, and I tried their vodka and whiskey. Both were in the good, not great category for me. To be great, you have to be on par with my current go-to brands, which are Ocean Vodka from Hawaii and Rebecca Creek Whiskey from here in San Antonio, which I'm actually sipping during this podcast. I sampled some more local beers on their tap, while Gina tried their frozen moonshine drinks and their vodka sodas, which she highly recommends. We talked more about mixed drinks when the afternoon bartender came in. We spitballed some ideas. All in all, it made for a really fun day, and I look forward to going back again and again. So if you find yourself in Hot Springs, please stop by Crystal Ridge Distillery and say hi to Tara and Erica for me. There are several lakes in the area, but the three main ones are Catherine, Hamilton, and Wachita. We usually rent a condo on Hamilton, and we were considering going out to Catherine for an afternoon. However, we ran into this talkative chap in the pools at the Quapaw Bathhouse who raved about how clean the water was at Wachita. So we ended up going out there. The water was indeed clean and beautiful. We decided to bring a picnic lunch with us, drove about 25 minutes away from where we were staying, and eventually found a table on a hill overlooking the area on the lake set aside for swimmers. After eating, we wrapped up our leftover sandwiches and pretzels in a bag, and took Gina's beach chair down to the shore and got her set up. I decided I wanted to find a hiking trail and go for a little walk. So after promising Gina I would be back in about 45 minutes, I set an alarm and headed out on the Caddo Bend Trail. Now, the trail is approximately 4 miles long. I went in maybe about a half a mile because I promised Gina I wouldn't overdo it. Besides, it was a hotter than average day and I didn't bring any water with me. And as it turned out, I would not see another human being the entire time I was on the trail. I got a few hundred yards in, and I listened to the birds. Occasionally, I heard a lizard skittering close by. A little farther along, I see the lake about maybe 50 yards downhill, and suddenly, everything went quiet. No birds, nothing moving along the ground, just complete silence. Now, I'm not a big nature buff, but I was told that if everything suddenly goes quiet, that means an apex predator is in the area. Suddenly, my mind starts questioning, am I the apex predator? Is there a wild boar or a bobcat around? And of course, I'm in Arkansas, so I start thinking, Falk monster. For those of you who don't get the joke, the Falk monster is a cryptid reportedly similar to Bigfoot, sighted in far southwest Arkansas back in the 70s, about 150 miles away from where I was. If you've ever watched the Mystery Science Theater 3000 episode that pokes fun of the movie Boggy Creek 2 and the Legend Continues, you've heard of the Falk monster. I continued on a little farther until my alarm went off and I walked back to Gina by the lake. Turns out, a crow had managed to rip into the plastic bag with our pretzels in it and helped itself. I wasn't about to try to salvage anything, so the ducks got some special treats. There was also a flock of Canadian geese with a few goslings among them. I was able to get a few photographs of the babies before one of the geese got extremely defensive. And as you know, or at least should know, geese are the assholes of the bird kingdom. Our traditional spa day at Quapaw Bathhouse is always the most relaxing day I have each year. Don't tell Gina this, but I've missed it during the COVID panic. I sent pictures back to my new co-workers just to piss them off. The last place we visited before leaving Hot Springs was the Riley Brothers Glass Studio. This is one of our must stops that doesn't include food or alcohol. I am what I am. We first met the brothers when they worked out of the garage of their house back in our first trip to Hot Springs. They have since opened a studio on Grand Street, south of the historic district. We have several of their creations throughout the house. In the past, we've watched them make Christmas ornaments and plates. This time around, they were making stemless wine glasses. As required by their craft, they are a well-oiled machine in their processes. I could joke that they do everything so precise, even the steam comes out of their glass molds the same way. They are always gracious hosts, talking with us while they work, telling us about the history of the town, their own experiences, and of course, the process it takes to create everything. So I highly recommend going there and just picking their brains, if nothing else. We usually spend at least an hour there, even when it's 90 degrees outside and even hotter inside with the orange glowing furnace. You definitely need to visit and buy some stuff from them. Or, you know, you could simply go to their website and order it there as well. Just keep in mind that you'll have to be put on a waiting list for anything custom made. On second thought, you know what? Just do the online thing. Don't go visit. In fact, forget everything I just told you about Hot Springs, Arkansas. You don't want to go there. Go to Vegas or someplace else instead. You see, the simple fact is, Even in the few years we've been going, we've noticed more and more other tourists around us. More tourists means more mass market, homogenous fare. I've seen this before in places like South Padre Island, where the locally owned businesses eventually close or get pushed into the background in favor of national chains because they see these eclectic little places as cash grabs. I want this place to keep its charm, not be overrun by the same fucking franchises that I can get back home. Yeah, I know. I'm being selfish, and I want to keep Hot Springs all to myself. If you went, you would too. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.